This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a special playoff-bound edition of Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier. And, John, we're going to get right into it. On the line with us from Houston, he's a repeat guest, John.
Yeah, but we saw him in the clubhouse.
We did.
In the clubhouse and, getting sprayed.
And, Jim, that's why we had to call you. From NBC Sports Philadelphia, it's Jim Salisbury. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. You know, I'm a veteran of those things. I've been in a number of those champagne clubhouse celebrations, and I've always been pretty good at avoiding getting wet, and I guess I'm just losing my fastball because I got a little bit the other night.
Yeah, you did, and you know, we saw you down there, Jim. How did that clubhouse party rank? You've been through a lot of them, and what were some of the highlights that stood out for you?
It was pretty raucous, but it was, you know, I think they're all kind of that way because the season, you know, it's such a long journey and such a grind that, you know, whenever you make pro season, there's that feeling of jubilation and that feeling of accomplishment. And in particular, in the Phillies clubhouse a couple nights ago, you know, I sensed triumph, obviously. I sensed euphoria, excitement, but I also sensed something else, relief. They hadn't been to the postseason in 10 years. I mean, we all know that. You guys feel it. We feel it up in the press box. We cover it. We write about it. I think it was felt throughout the organization from the ownership level on down, and it became even more acute, the emptiness, over the last few years as ownership has, you know, written big checks to Bryce Harper and Zach Wheeler and Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber and another big check to retain JT Realmuto. So the payroll has risen, and expectations have risen with it, but there's been no postseason berths, and that has created, you know, a lot of anxiety, a lot of disappointment. And so I really felt a palpable sense of relief and even kind of, you know, heightened by the fact that they had a really difficult September. You know, they lost 10 of 13 at one point, so the final miles of the journey were really difficult. So, you know, there was it was cathartic, and it was a sense of relief in addition to triumph in that clubhouse the other night.
Yeah, and how about some of the guys that, you know, I know Segura was, I think, the longest tenured player in major leagues that hadn't reached the playoffs. You know, you had, obviously, you had Realmuto hadn't made the playoffs. You had, I mean, you go through the lineup, Hoskins and some other guys. And then you have the emotional factor of Nola, who's, you know, who's been maligned with, you know, having tough Septembers. Mm-hmm. And then Eflin, after all the journeys he's gone through with the injuries and closing out the game for his buddy Nola, and Rob Thompson, the journeys he's been through. I mean, talk about the emotion, you know, with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, there was a team drought, and then there was these personal droughts. Segura, the most games of any major leaguer without ever appearing in a postseason game. JT Realmuto, second on that list. Aaron Nola came into that game with 202 career starts. Only Jordan Lyle had more starts without appearing in a postseason game. Hmm. In the major leagues as an active player. Zach Wheeler was third on that list. So there were all these individual droughts to go along with the team drought. It was, you know, it was kind of storybook. The clincher in a lot of ways, the longest tenured Philly, Aaron Nola, pitches a gem. I mean, I'm sitting up there thinking I'm going to see a perfect game in the clincher for a good part of the night. He pitches unbelievable, 7 2/3, shutout, 2 hit. And then you mentioned Zach Wheeler, the second longest tenured Philly, battles knee problems really throughout his career. And this year did not start after June 25th. Was very disappointed not to have his knees under him because his arm felt so good. And he was very disappointed not to be able to answer the bell, but worked his way back in the month of September and as a reliever. And lo and behold, comes out and earns the save, his first big league save, the first time he ever pitched as a reliever in the ninth inning with a lead, closes out a clinching game.
Were you surprised by that? Were you surprised that he went to Eflin in that situation?
No, because Rob Thompson had said that would be an option for Wheeler. For Zach Eflin, that he would not hesitate to use him as a closer, he would not hesitate to use him as an opener, would not hesitate to use him in the middle of the game. But he had definitely said that he could be an option late. And, Sir Anthony Dominguez is teetering, and I think he's fatigued. He's not throwing a lot of strikes. Ditto for David Robinson. So, I think on this particular night, Alvarado and Eflin were his two high leverage guys late in the game because those other guys had carried a heavy load previous to that, and those were the guys that were most rested. And they did a great job. I'd be remiss if I didn't say what a great job Jose Alvarado has done for months with this team. And it was very symbolic that he got really the biggest out of the game. He came in to relieve Nola with two men on in a one-run game at the time. And, he was 99, 100, 101 sinkers to strike out Tucker from the Astros and get out of that gym in a one-run game. I mean, it was just a huge out. So,
and you know what I love about that gym, the Alvarado? I love the fact that, he had a tough season coming into the, when he got sent down to the minors.
Yeah.
And a lot
of
guys can go, you can go one way or the other. And he could have sulked and now he's on bus rides. He's in AAA. And he comes back and he's been unhittable, right, since then.
Yes. I mean, hats off to the front office and the people who run pitching for the team to send him down. I mean, it's a very humbling experience, disappointment. They sent him down with a plan to, work on some things and get his command back. And he started throwing, he started throwing a cutter and he started commanding everything better. And obviously he's a power guy. So it was really good to see him have a great night. Nola have a great night. Eflin have a great night in the clincher. And honestly, there was one more guy that I think lended to the storybook nature of the clincher. And that was Kyle Schwarber because, he's only been here one season, but man, has he taken to that clubhouse, and I think he's a real natural leader in there. I think he's the best leader in that clubhouse, one of the best I've seen. He brings an intangible quality, to the clubhouse with his character and his inclusive nature, his everyman quality to him, and just how hard he grinds. And then he produces on the field. He hits his 46th home run that night. So he had two of them, right? So. He leads off the first pitch, and then he hits one later in the game. So he was the guy that rejuvenated this team in June, with 12 home runs and 27 RBIs in that month. I don't think this team is here without Kyle Schwarber in that month of June. I mean, Reese Hoskins picked it up that month and supported Haas and supported Schwarber, and that was the first month of Rob Thompson. There were a lot of storybook elements in that June revival, but I think it was all led by Schwarber, so it was fitting that he hits two home runs and is one of the stars of that clinching game.
Yeah, Jim, you took my that question away from me because I was going to ask you about Kyle Schwarber, the leadership, and just the general vibe of the clubhouse all year. And I guess a lot's been talked about when Rob Thompson took over that maybe there was a different vibe. But what was it like covering that team all year and the personalities and the leadership that you saw?
I think early in the year you could sense the fact that, ownership had taken the payroll to a new level higher than ever before. I mean, one of like top three or four highest in the majors, over $230 million. They made those late signings in spring training of Schwarber and Castellanos. And then, like I said earlier, previous years, Harper, Wheeler, Realmuto, a maturing young group of players. And the fact that they had never been to the postseason and it was reaching 10 years, longest in the National League. The drought. So I think there were a lot of expectations that this was going to be the year they were going to break the drought. They get off to a slow start for the first 2 months, losing a lot of late heartbreakers. not playing good defense, beating themselves, and you could feel the clubhouse getting tighter and tighter and tighter because they weren't playing well and they had big expectations. And, you know, I look at it as Dave Dombrowski had one card to play to try to save the season at the two-month mark, and that was make a managerial change, try to make a change in voice, change in vibe in that clubhouse. And also, I think there's also a shock value when you change managers because a pro athlete is a proud person. They look in the mirror, they say, you know, I just got a good man fired because I haven't performed well. So I think shock value helped elevate or helped wake them up in the month of June, and they responded by playing well. Thompson has, Rob Thompson, the interim skipper, just has a real calming way about him. I think that worked well in the clubhouse that had become kind of bound up by expectations and anxiety and just not producing. And it, everybody just took a deep breath. And, you know, they start off with 8 wins in a row under Thompson, get back to 500 in a hurry. All of a sudden they start believing in him. He believes in them. And it becomes like a really positive snowball effect. So, you know, what was it like? What is it like covering this team? To me, it's kind of a year of it was a year of big expectations that you weren't sure if they were going to happen, and then the unexpected happened. The bench coach, this very humble, good-natured baseball lifer, with really high baseball IQ, but I think a really good heart and caring way about him for the people around him, and real sincerity to him. That was the unexpected. He came in and he was the galvanizing effect that ended up breaking the postseason drought and a team realizing its expectations, because the big expectation was to break the postseason drought. They've done that. It was a tough journey at times, but it was an exciting journey at times. They played great ball for about 3 months. Bullpen was good. Rotation was good. They got big hits, played better defense, had a tough September, but they're there. And when you have two really good starting pitchers at the top, like Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, who can be outstanding on any given night, you know, anything can happen in the month of October. Anything can happen. I mean, you know, I remember in 2008, 24-year-old Cole Hamels really kind of put the team on his back and pitched it through October. I mean, they got good complimentary efforts from guys like Blanton and Myers, Jamie Moyer, but, you know, the one pillar was Hamels and a good bullpen, a bullpen that was hot, a good bullpen that was hot, and a maturing core of young position players and good offensive players that were starting to believe. So if they get good starting pitching, I think they can surprise some people and win a few ball games here in the month of October. You just never know. Never know. And when you have good starting pitching, it's like a boxer having that one big knockout punch by his side. And if he can land it, good things can happen. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch what shakes out here. Starting Friday in St. Louis.
Yeah, let's before we preview that series, I want to get into that. One last thing, the factor of, you know, the sense that Rob Thompson came in and then, you know, Bryce Harper was hurt, that kind of opened up a positive development in the sense that a lot of the young guys, which they call the daycare, you know, were getting playing time. And I think every championship team needs, you know, some energy from the young players. They need some production, obviously, from the young players. But it was so great to see Dalton Guthrie and Matt Vierling and, you know, Nick Maton and Garrett Stubbs and a lot of these young guys that contributed so much, again, whether it's the new manager coming in or whether it's an injury. But I think they were key to the, you know, the success of us making the playoffs.
Absolutely. A full team effort. And there was a couple guys you didn't mention. Alec Bowman, still a young player. He was sort of improving every day in front of our eyes. It became a, you know, he had a great run at the plate.
Yep.
You know, you talk about losing Harper. Derek Hall comes up to the minors and hits 9 home runs. I mean, they were looking for left-handed power. Oh, let's give this career minor leaguer a shot and hitting home runs on a triple A. Comes up and hits 9 home runs from the left side while Harper's out. And the rookie shortstop.
Yeah, you know,
he's playing second base while Gene Segura was out. Played so well, made Didi Gregorius expendable. They put him at shortstop. But to me, the tough position on the diamond. And he, you know, did a hell of a job and really swung the bat well. Had a little, I think he got a little fatigued in September, but he's really turned it on here the last few days and played well. So you got a great contribution from a rookie shortstop. You got a great improvement and contribution from a young third baseman. And then the guys you mentioned, Maton and Hall and Guthrie. And you know, one Beerling, of their offseason goals, Beerling. I mean, Matt Beerling had, I mean, he, you know, him and, who was it? Milwaukee, Beerling, and who hit the other home run that night? Baum and Beerling in Milwaukee that night in early June during the winning streak. They turned a loss into a late victory, and that, man, did that electrify the clubhouse. Those are chemistry builders. So, you know, Beerling and Baum and with big hits. And Stubbs, you know, one of their offseason goals last year was to upgrade backup catching. I mean, they flat out came out and said it. And he's done that across the board. He's played very well when called upon and has brought a real energy to the clubhouse. And he can also pitch a little bit. They've used him a few times.
Yeah, but,
you're right. The young guys, the veterans, it's been a really for the most part, a really good mix.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, so let's get into the matchup with the Cardinals. Obviously, three games are going to be at Busch Stadium Friday, Saturday, Sunday, best of three. Now, we didn't know until last night who we were going to face. It was most likely the Cardinals, but it could have been, if we had tied the Padres, we would have been the second wildcard team, which would have meant we're playing the Mets. So me personally, and I'm sure, Tom, you feel this way too, I'd rather face whoever St. Louis is throwing out there, and again, they have a bunch of options, but facing DeGrom and Scherzer and Bassett.
I wanted the Mets. And
you
it's
did?
Funny, yeah,
did
and
you?
It's so funny you said that because I was getting texts and, you know, bring on the Mets, bring on the Mets. I think fans are like, hey, you know.
I guess
so. You know.
I guess I'm just looking at – I'm looking at the revenge from 2011.
Ah, there you go.
Against the Cardinals. And their rotation hasn't been set up yet. I'm sure it's going to be some form of Wainwright, Michaelis, and – Jordan Montgomery, the guy they got from the Yankees. But they've got other Flaherty. They've got some other guys. You know, how do you see the pitching matchups, starting pitchers versus Philly starting pitchers?
Yeah, well, Wheeler's ready to go in game one. He's a great place to start. I mean, he's a great pitcher. He's back. He's healthy. Ready to go. And he's dominated the Cardinals two starts this year. So,
yep. 14 scoreless innings.
Mm, nice.
Yeah, domination. So, I mean, I think that means something when you're when you've had success against a team, especially recent success. I think it can fuel confidence, kind of put you in a good frame of mind. I don't know who the game one starter will be, but they have a formidable rotation, like you mentioned. Michaelis, Flaherty is back. Wainwright, I mean, is totally playoff tested. And they acquired Jordan Montgomery from the Yankees. And they also acquired Jose Quintana, who's pitched very well.
Yep.
I mean, he was a guy that was linked to the Phillies with the Pirates at the trade deadline. He's pitched really well for them. So I think whoever they go with is going to be pretty formidable. I think the Phillies, you know, if they're having good at-bats and hitting with runners in scoring position or getting guys on base and then hitting with runners in scoring position and getting a good start, they can run with anybody. We'll see what happens. I think they're going to be close games, and it starts with the starting pitcher keeping you in it and get a few runs, and then And then who's it going to be? Who's going to be that, you know, the back end? I mean, you have Sir Anthony, who struggled here a little bit down the stretch. Is he going to kick it in? David Robertson, a lot of postseason experience, struggled a little bit down the stretch with his command. Is he going to kick it in? Alvarado's been great. And then Zach Wheeler as sort of this new bullpen X factor, you know, out for 3 months.
Zach
Efron. Back in the bullpen. Who did I say?
You said Wheeler. That's all right.
I'm sorry. Zach Efron. Back, you know, with a fresh arm because he missed 3 months. So you get a fatigued bullpen with a fresh arm down there in Zach Efron. That's a great thing. So we'll see how it shakes out.
I mean, really, it's interesting because you could have, as you said, Alvarado and Efron almost pushed in the back and almost putting Robertson Dominguez more as the seventh inning, sixth inning, seventh yeah. inning, eighth inning.
Yeah. And honestly, that's kind of what they kind of look like right now. It's the way I just think both of them have carried a heavy load. Sir Anthony's coming. He missed some time with tricep tendonitis. And it's just been a little, you know, slow coming back for him. But relievers are funny. They can have like two good outings and all of a sudden they feel like they're on top of the world. Their confidence kicks in. So there are ingredients down there. You know, there's power. Wheeler's Wheeler. Efflin and Wheeler. Wheeler at the beginning of the game and Zach Efflin now at the end of the game. They're both strike throws. So lately the walks have been a concern of the bullpen. So in addition to having a fresh arm, Efflin is a strike throw. So, you know, at the very least, Rob Thompson has options down there at the back of the game.
And Rob, we trust. And Rob, we trust for sure going into these playoffs. Jim, what do you think of the expanded, wild card format? Do you think it's good or bad for baseball?
Well, I mean, it's good in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
Phillies wouldn't be there under the old format.
Well, you know what, Jim? Too, I think of it's that argument about does it render the regular season a little less meaningful. Because, you can have a hot team and, anything can happen in a 3-game series.
Yeah.
And we have, two of the best starters in baseball. And so who wants to face the Phillies? So, the pressure now is on the Mets and the Dodgers or the Astros, these teams that, are expected to win, who had 100-win seasons. So that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's created a lot of excitement. The regular season, I know the argument that too many playoff teams cheapens the regular season a little bit, but they've added ways to try to combat that. There's the head-to-head element where they used to play. If two teams are tied, they would play a tiebreaker if necessary. It's now based on head-to-head competition. So the series against the season series against the Padres really mattered for the Phillies because they ended up winning that. They would have had a tiebreaker. It really mattered against Milwaukee because the Phillies won that and would have had a tiebreaker. So the Dodgers as well. And then they really struggled. They really struggled against the Cubs. They lost all six games against the Cubs. They really struggled against the Giants. I think they went 1-5. So those games mattered because you're scratching and clawing for every last victory. As you're struggling in September and one or two more victories against, say, the Cubs, a team that, is well below 500, that would have really eased the pressure down the stretch. So, look, the regular season still counts. I can see the argument that you have, teams with 87 wins making it and 86 wins, and now you have other teams with 100-plus, and maybe there's an iniquity there, but it's a great postseason tournament. You look at back in '87, the Twins had a poor record and ended up winning the World. Not a poor record, but they had mid '80s wins and they ended up winning the World Series. And I think in the '06 Cardinals, mid '80s wins and they won the World Series. That team actually had 2 8-game losing streaks, if I remember, and they ended up getting hot at the right time and, winning the World Series. So it's still a great tournament. And, whoever wins it, whether you have 87 wins or 104 wins in the regular season, you still get a parade, you still get a ring, and They still call you world champion.
Hey, Jim, let's go through a little lineup construction because you can change it every series. 26-man roster. And it's interesting, in a three-game series, that basically gives Rob certain options. In other words, you might, you know, I guess a couple questions. Is Suarez, you think Suarez is definitely the third pitcher. And if that's the case, is Falter on that roster? Because wouldn't you say Falter maybe for game one, because you're going to need someone. Wheeler probably won't be able to pitch in a game one of the NLDS.
Right. Yeah, Suarez is going to start game three. It's going to be Wheeler, Nola, Suarez, if needed. And I guess he would start game one of the next series.
If it's only two. Yep, if they win the first two, yep.
Yeah, so he would start game one of the next series. But if they go three, they're going to need somebody. And that would be like Falter, Syndergaard, or Gibson. They'd have a choice.
Right.
I expect Gibson to be on the postseason roster, maybe be used out of the bullpen first round. And then they have a decision. Do they carry Syndergaard? Do they carry Falter in the first round? Or do they keep one of them off, send them down to Florida to the instructional league to, you know, face hitters and pitch a simulated game and have them ready for game one of the next series if necessary? So they have some choices there. And it's probably going to be based on who they start in game one of the second series if they get there. I would think maybe be based on the matchup, you know?
Right, and then Sosa is coming back from injury, and Brad Hand could be coming back from injury, which then adds, right. You know, the decision would be if Sosa comes into the lineup or comes onto the roster, does that mean a Dalton Guthrie would get knocked off?
I don't know who the last guy or two. I mean, Guthrie, Maton, they're all in the running. I mean, you could, if you opted for speed and defensive versatility, you know, it's maybe Guthrie or Maton. If you wanted a big power bat off the bench and you're facing a team with a lot of maybe right hand in the bullpen, maybe it's Derek Hall. As far as Sosa, he's back in Philly. He's been working out. Made really good progress from that hamstring injury. But I don't know if he's going to be ready to be activated. He hasn't played in a few weeks. I think it would be, in my own opinion, just kind of watching the way they handle injured players and how they bring injured players back from the IL. I would think it would be a stretch to think he'd be active for this round. So, you know, maybe it's a Maton who gets that last spot because he can play infield, outfield. Give you a pretty good at bat off the bench, really can hit a fastball, might be attractive. As far as Brad Hand, he just threw a simulated game here in Houston moments ago on Wednesday morning. He's been down with some elbow tendonitis. And typically, I mean, in a simulated game, you're out there throwing, you know, you're letting it go. And they're evaluating him with their eyes and with their technology. So they'll look at the data and try to ascertain if he's back to where he should be. And then they'll check with him tomorrow and evaluate him, see how he bounces back before they make a decision whether to put him on the postseason roster. He's got a lot of experience, left-hander, sharp breaking ball. He might be valuable on the roster. I'd say he probably has a better chance than Sosa, but, you know, we'll find out late Friday morning, I guess, when they announce their roster.
Nice. Well, I know we got to let you go, Jim, but before we do, can I ask you, Aaron Judge, significant milestone last night. Put that into context. What do you think of the season that Aaron has had and the significance of numbers 62?
I mean, it's spectacular. When you pass Babe Ruth and Roger Maris, hit 62 home run. I mean, we're here, kind of gushing over Kyle Schwarber's 46, you know? And it was, I'll tell you what, it should be gushed over. It was pretty awesome. To see a guy hit 62, amazing, and do it clean, amazing, and do it with, you know, all the eyes of the sport on him throughout the month of September. There's a lot of pressure, but he just continues to do it. So it was you know, exciting. He's a big, big man with a lot of leverage in his swing. And when he squares it up, it just goes a mile. So, I mean, he turned down a huge contract extension from the Yankees because he thought he was worth more.
Yeah.
And he bet on himself, and what an amazing bet he made. And, I'll point this out, a little Phillies connection. So the Phillies scouting director, Brian Barber, who's been on board for 3 years now and has, I think, really done a good job. I mean, who doesn't like Nick Abel and Andrew Painter as some of his number ones? He was pretty much the Yankees' number two guy in scouting before he came to Philadelphia. And he personally, you know, there were doubts about Judge, about what type of throw he was going to be, how high he was going to, how, you know, where his ceiling was going to be, was he going to make the big leagues. But the Yankees took him in the late in the first round. And Brian Barber was, like I said, the number two guy. He really championed that pick. Mm. He wanted Aaron Judge, and he pushed for them to pick Aaron Judge. And looks like it's proven to be a very good pick. So maybe Brian Barber will land one of those for the Phillies someday.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, Jim, one last thing. We didn't talk about the St. Louis lineup. I think there's a lot of cool parallels. The fact that we, you know, in the beginning of the show, we mentioned where this could be revenge for 2011, the way that ended. But also, it's kind of, there's some cool parallels. You have, you know, Sosa, we talked about him. He came from the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
You've got, you know, two of the guys were on the Cardinals when we played them in 2011, Yadier Molina and Pujols, right?
Yeah.
So, but just real quick, talk about the lineup. Obviously, you've got, you know, the big three of Goldschmidt, Arenado, and Pujols. But they also have former Philly Dickerson, and they've got Molina, but they also have some young players. I mean, do you like their lineup?
Yeah, well, you get that. Dylan Carlson's a good player. Tommy Edman's a good young player. And then you got two guys who are perennial MVP candidates, maybe the MVP in Paul Goldschmidt. Arenado's one of the most exciting players in baseball, in my opinion. Just for the way he drives and runs and plays just an unbelievable third base. So to me, those are the guys you really got to be careful with. And Arenado and Goldschmidt struggled a little bit in September. So I'm sure the Phillies, you know, won't complain if they're still feeling for it a little bit, but they're very, very dangerous. So, and then you got Hall of Famer in Molina and Wainwright, amazing. Pujols, I mean, what a story he's been. So, it should be a very, very compelling series. I'm looking forward to it.
We got this, Jim. We got this in the bag, all right? You can bet the house.
You can't. Well, you're an employee of the Phillies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I can't bet. What am I talking about? Jim, thanks for joining us. I know you're busy down there. Enjoy the last game here Wednesday, and then enjoy the playoffs. We'll see her at the ballpark hopefully on October 14th for the third home game, the third game of the divisional series would be at Citizens Bank Park. So that might be the next time we see you.
That was something Schwarber was saying the other night, how he has seen. I heard stories and seen videos about how electric Citizens Bank Park was in the playoffs during the big run from 07 to 2011. And he said he can't wait. He wants to get it back to Philly because he wants to see it with his own eyes. So maybe he'll get there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
and
Jim.
We'll see you when you get back home.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Tom, we're going to get a break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. All right, Jim, we'll talk Phillies playoff baseball. Right after this.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
And we're back, Phillies backstage. And hey, John, Jim Salisbury, he was in the middle of it. He's got a great perspective, not just of this year, but, you know, just kind of, you know, all the years he's been around Phillies baseball. And just by listening to him, I think he's really impressed. And you made a good point, just the full team. I mean, we went through everybody on the roster,
right,
and everybody has contributed.
Well, and the good news is, too, looking, you know, again, we're recording this on Wednesday. The fact that we are, you know, that Harper's had some at-bats coming off the injury, so he's getting a little more acclimated, right? You would hate this playoffs to start when he's had, like, 1 week back, right? But he's been back a little bit. Schwarber's getting completely hot. So the lineup, you know, is starting to get hot. You had Stott doing well. A little concerning on the bullpen as far as, you know, we mentioned Dominguez, Robertson, who's pitched a lot. But again, then you look at the upside, and Eflin and Alvarado's been stud all year. You know, and then you got a strikeout guy like, you know, Bilotti. And it just, and then the youth of the, you never know what's going to go on in the playoffs, but I like kind of where the team is health-wise and kind of how we ended, I guess, right? I mean, forget last night's game.
Yeah.
Because that didn't really count. But it's, you know, I like where we are.
Do you also like the fact that we played, you know, the third to the last, you know, game of the season, and it meant something? Whereas some of these teams, when they clinch early, you lose a little bit of that mojo. And so I kind of like the fact that we had to take to, you know, the third to the last game of the season to clinch.
I agree, and I hope our players are studying history, because as I've mentioned, 2011. That was one of the worst games, the worst ending. You have Halladay on the mound, you know, and then the way it ended too, Ryan Howard going down with a Achilles heel. So everyone just left that game just with a horrible feeling. And now, 11 years later, we are facing the same team, two of the guys on the team. I guess Wainwright was technically on that team, I guess, but he wasn't. I think he had an injury. Mm-hmm. And we have a chance for a little retribution. Now, it's in St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think the pressure's on them. We're the
no
wild
doubt.
Card team that's coming in there. And again, you said it. Who wants to face Wheeler? And they haven't had success against Wheeler. Wheeler and Nola, after watching what he just did, you know. And then if there's game three, you got Ranger Suarez, and with a lineup that can do complete damage, it could be a lot of fun.
John, I'm convinced. Why do we even have to play the games? I mean, let's just you know. We'll just take the divisional series, and the Cardinals have been eliminated.
All right,
we've got it all figured out.
Now that we're back in the playoffs, I want you to tell me your favorite playoff memory.
Huh.
You know, I'll start, get your brain working.
All right, go ahead.
Mine was by far and away going out to L.A. For the game where Shane tied it up and Matt Stairs hit the magical home run off Jonathan Broxton.
You weren't at that. Were you out there?
I was at the game, and I was sitting with Anthony Gargano and I think Glenn Macnow maybe. And then
really?
Our friend Cindy Webster was out there. And I remember we were losing, right? And it was just tense. You're really tense. And Cindy went up to the stands at a critical moment to go get sushi, right? Who gets sushi at a ball game, first of all?
In L.A.
And I guess
too.
You're in L.A.
That's what they do.
But all of a sudden.
Did she have Chardonnay with that too?
She might have. Shane Victorino hits that tying home run, right. And she calls up and says, oh, I'm so excited about this. I'm coming right down. I said, no, I don't know about you, but I am highly superstitious, especially when it comes to a playoff game. Made her stay up there, and then Matt Stairs hits the greatest moment I've ever been in a ballpark.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, same thing. We didn't allow her to come down until the end of the game, till we secured the victory. And I don't know where she stood. She was way up there. She wasn't coming anywhere near us. And we had great seats. So Matt Stairs' home run was
easily
the coolest moment involved in the playoffs, other than obviously Brad Lidge striking out Eric Hinsky.
But you're saying easily? I mean, there's so many moments.
And Jimmy Rollins double. Or
I didn't know you were going to ask this question, John. So the first thing when I think of I guess I'm aging myself, but the first World Series game I ever went to was 1980. It was game one. Phillies are down big early, and then they stage a comeback, and Bake McBride hit a 3-run home run in game one. And I just always – it was the loudest –
I've ever seen the vet. I mean, I was a kid, so like everything is magnified anyway. But to me, as a fan, I would say that's that was my number one memory. And then, I guess, you know, since working here, you could say 93.
Yeah, great.
You know, with Mitch's final pitch.
How about Jeff Jenkins starting off short in game two, right? When the crowd's electric, it's a weird situation where we're halfway through the game. The game just started.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you know, all of a sudden they put Jeff Jenkins in there.
And I know we've talked about this before, so don't want to repeat it. But 2007, when that last game of the season, so I guess that was not a playoff memory, but it put us into the playoffs. It was clinching the NL East on that last day when the Mets, lost to the Marlins that day. But so it's hard to come up with one, John. I'm sorry.
Well, hopefully there's going to be more moments that we can basically talk about in a couple of years when we reflect back on the 2022
Absolutely.
Playoff season. All right, Tom, amazing enough, we weren't going to have a quiz. But while we were waiting for Jim Salisbury, I put together whipped together a quiz.
So. You did that literally. Jim said he'd call back in 10 minutes. So in 10 minutes, you did that. So
I have 9 questions.
I've never seen you work and prepare for the quiz, but here I'm thinking, John must spend all week preparing this quiz for our guest. And here you slopped this thing together in 10 minutes.
I did. And I have 9 questions. Are you ready?
Now, it's not going to be about my life.
No,
which,
it's going to be about St. Louis.
Our guests always have it easy because it's about their life. And
yes,
you figure, okay.
It's harder, yeah.
This is going to be tough. I mean, I use my,
Well, and you are the best friends of the Fanatics, so of course I put some geography questions in there. So,
Oh, brother.
I know the Fanatic is not good at geography. Hopefully you are better than your best
geography
friend.
Geography challenge.
All right, 9 questions, different from our typical 8.
9 questions.
9 questions, yeah.
You or did we, 9 questions
we
in 10 minutes?
We could call it 8 questions and a bonus. How about that?
Okay.
All right, so same thing, Tom. I think the bar is going to be 6.
Okay.
And you're going to get a 2022 postseason hat. It's a new era official hat.
Oh, that the one that you're wearing?
Yeah, the one you're wearing too.
And I'm wearing it already. Scott Painter's got it for me already.
Yes, I might even get you another one so you can give one of your 3 boys that.
Right,
right
on. Right on.
All right. First question is all St. Louis. And we'll stay with a lot of baseball here.
St. Louis.
Who is the all-time Cubs? Who is the all-time Cardinals leader in batting average with a lifetime .359 batting average? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cardinals all-time leader batting average with a .359 average.
I think I got this.
Is it Johnny Mize, Rogers Hornsby, Medwick, or Stan Musial?
Well, I was going to say Musial, but Rogers Hornsby, did he play for the Cardinals?
Yes.
Was he a big Cardinals guy? Then I'll go Roger Hornsby.
Roger Hornsby is correct.
Yeah,
You're one for one. All right. Who is the all-time home run leader for the Cardinals? Home runs as a Cardinal.
Okay.
With 475. Is it Stan Musial? Is it Albert Pujols? Is it Ken Boyer? Or is it Jim Edmonds?
Wow. And you're not even putting Mark McGwire in there, figuring that he hit a lot with the A's.
Yes.
So here's let me hear that list again.
Stan Musial, Albert Pujols, Ken Boyer, Jim Edmonds.
Stan the man
actually is the all-time leader in hits, singles, doubles, triples, and home runs.
Yeah, that guy. Ooh,
and Ken Brett's the only one that also leads their respective franchise in all those.
Wow.
So pretty
Stan
crazy.
The man.
All right, you were 2 for 2. You're pretty good here.
There we go.
Do you want me to stay with baseball? I'll stay with baseball. All right, the most strikeouts for a Cardinals pitcher all time with 3,117.
I got one in my head.
Is that
you would
Dizzy
think it
Dean?
Would be.
Oh. Adam Wainwright, Bob Gibson, or Chris Carpenter?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, Gibson always comes to mind. But, I don't know how many years. You're throwing, Wainwright out there. Would he even – how many strikeouts?
3,117.
Wainwright doesn't have that many strikeouts.
Sometimes when you're taking tests, you should go with your first instinct.
How about that Bob Gibson?
Bob Gibson, you are 3 for 3.
Nice.
All right, staying.
Thanks for that. I'm glad I didn't come off
staying
that.
Staying with the baseball theme, most saves as a Cardinal, is it Jason Isringhausen? Is it Lee Smith? Is it Todd Worrell or is it Bruce Sutter?
Bruce Sutter was going to – that was the first name that came to mind there, Bruce Sutter. But you, who did you throw? Lee Arthur.
Isringhausen, Lee Smith, Todd Worrell, or Bruce Sutter? 217 saves.
Again, with saves, it's interesting because there weren't as many, with the old guys.
Yeah.
So I guess Sutter I wouldn't go with. Lee Arthur. I'll go Lee Arthur.
Jason Isringhausen, 217. All right. I've got a couple more. I got some geography questions. One more baseball. And a mascot.
Okay.
So the last baseball is, how many World Series titles have the Cardinals won?
Go ahead.
Is it 7, 9, 11, or 14?
I know it's a big number.
They are second only to the Yankees, who have 27.
Right. So I don't think it was 14, but it was a big. It's a big number. I'll go 14.
11.
Ah.
You always go with the third, the one that's
third
second to last. Right?
Always go C.
Come on. Don't you understand that from your testing back in high school?
Ah,
all right. You should get this one. What was the year Fred Bird, the St. Louis Cardinals mascot, was introduced to St. Louis fans? Was it 1976, 1979, 1980, or 1983?
I'll say it's either 80 or 83, and I'll.
What if it wasn't one of those two?
No, really? Right. What were the other two?
76 or 79?
I'll go 79.
79 is correct.
Steve
Very
Carlton
good.
Hated Fred Bird.
Is that right?
Yeah, he hated Fred Bird.
When he was a Cardinal or when
well,
he was a Philly?
No, because he was with the Phillies.
Oh, right.
Fred Bird came out the year after the Fanatic came from the Galapagos Islands.
All right. I'm going to give you a couple geography, and then the last one would be celebrity. So, capital of Missouri, is it Jefferson City, Springfield, Columbia, or St. Louis?
Springfield.
Jefferson City.
Jeez. I'm terrible with capitals.
Do you want to call the Fanatic as your lifeline? All right. What is the largest city in Missouri? Is it Springfield, St. Louis, Kansas City, or Columbia?
I go St. Louis.
Kansas City. All right. I think if you get this bonus question, you're an official winner, okay? Which celebrity is not from St. Louis? Yogi Berra, John Goodman, Chuck Berry, or Monty Hall?
I'll go Yogi Berra.
Nope, Monty Hall.
Monty Hall wasn't?
Yeah. I figured that's close enough to match game 76.
I thought it was so random.
Throwing that out
there. That's why you went with Monty
Hall. Yeah, Yogi Berra, John Goodman, and Chuck Berry, and Kevin Kline are all from, even though I didn't mention Kevin Kline.
I got the first three right, John, and
you
then
did well
I,
in the baseball, but you were terrible in geography and not good at celebrities. So. And Fred Bird, you were even not so good.
Well, the Phillies are going to perform better than I did in that quiz against the St. Louis Cardinals.
Is the Fanatic excited about the playoffs?
Can't wait. He's fired up.
Anything special that the fans should be ready for?
He's working on it. Okay. Yeah, he's working on it. He's going to be out and about the next couple days, John, because we have the rally trolley out and about in the city. So I know the Fanatic is going to hand out a lot of rally towels and fire up the fans.
Sounds good. All right. Well, it was great having Salisbury on.
It was.
And it's great talking to you because that means we're in playoff mode.
Right on, playoff mode. And I'm sure all the fans listening, John, are in playoff mode. And hopefully we will talk to you next time with a couple wins under our belt. Right, John? All right. We'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage. Backstage with the Gorilla.